God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Please respect our speaker and silence your cell phones. Our speaker is being recorded with her permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren. And I'd like to introduce this evening's speaker, Lisa from San Clemente.
It was like a little cup holder for my water right here. Drink that one. Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. Smoking? Hello. Yeah. Oh, I'm super nervous and spent a lot of time today thinking about what I was going to say to be cool. And then my sponsor tells me, we're just all your friends, don't be nervous, we just want to hear a really tragic story at your expense. So, I got tragic stories, it is true. Okay, so you saw me take 12 years, absolutely shocking and amazing, honestly it is. I'm just looking around thinking, no one in this room has seen me drunk or loaded. There are some people in this town that have, and it's an ugly sight. And I feel like I always have to give this disclosure statement. I have 12 years clean and sober. My journey with this disease started with alcohol and ended with alcohol, but I crammed like a whole bunch of heroin in the middle of it. Heroin is what brought me to my knees, but when I finally did go to I've never counted, I've been to more, definitely double digits rehabs, when I finally went and stayed clean and sober since Christmas Eve of 2000, I had an AA sponsor. She was very strict. She took me through the steps. I'm still very close to her. I would call her with some of my problems, la 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 la, and she would say, turn to page 83, and I was like, oh my God, this isn't an AA problem, you don't understand. And she would always tell me it's all in the book, and you know what, it's true, it's all in the book. So that's my disclosure statement. My story involves drugs and alcohol. I find there, being around here for 12 years, I haven't run across that many purists anymore anyway, so hopefully you can relate. So you know what I'm going to start with? When my sponsor called me today and gave me her little pep talk about not being nervous, which la 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 la, I said, I've been in this program a while, and I've been to meetings all over the world, actually, and I lived in LA for my first part of the sobriety. I moved down here when I had 3 years. A lot of people don't stay sober. A lot of people don't. This disease that we have is no joke. I have the utmost respect for it. I love to laugh. I love to clown. I have a lot of fun in this program, but this disease is no fucking joke, and I take it real seriously, and I address my disease on a daily basis. So I'm going to start with why my birthday is Christmas Eve, because that is a good tragic story. Am I right? It's a good tragic story. Okay. 94, 97, and 2000. Someone I work with, I need to give a shout out to my coworkers. Shout out! These people, you guys just see me at meetings. These people deal with me every day, day in, day out, 5 a.m. They have to listen to me, and it can get ugly. And I appreciate all my friends that have come tonight to support me. It means a lot to me. Christmas Eve of 2000, I did not have friends that wanted to listen to me at all. As a matter of fact, I was living in Chico, creating mayhem up in there. I got sent to Chico from Japan. We can get back to all this later. But I was in Chico for less than a year. 2 days before Christmas Eve, I tried to find a rehab up there. I couldn't. I was supposed to go home to Boston. When my family found out I was drinking and using again, they're like, you're not coming here. We know this drill, and we're not going down this road again. Your tickets are revoked, officially. So Now I have to find a new plan for Christmas. Tragic, right? New plan. So I'm like trying to find rehabs up in Chico. I can't find them. I call this rehab that was a long-term rehab in Pomona that I had been to in 94, in 97. And I called and begged and pleaded, and they said, come down. So I started making my arrangements. I remember I was like super drunk for days, smoking anything I could get my hands on. Like I said, a lot of heroin crammed in there. I had like a plethora of pills in this vitamin bottle I carried around. You know, I had this belief that you go into detox as fucked up as you possibly can. They have something good. Then they have something to work with. You're like a project, you know? You don't want to go in there sober. Like, what's the point of that? So I had these friends, my friend Mary Sarah, because I thought for sure her name was Sarah. I called her Sarah for like 8 months up in Chico. I only lived there for like 11. Her name was friggin' Mary the whole time. So then I changed her name to Mary Sarah. Anyway, so I got her and her boyfriend to give me a ride to the airport in Sacramento to go to rehab. And so it's the day before of Christmas Eve. And they have like a truck. And they put me in the back of the truck. Like, they sit in the cab. And they try to make it out like, we want to make it a comfortable ride for you. We put blankets back there and pillows. You'll like it so much better. Honestly, they just didn't want to deal with me. So then we were like driving, and I would have to open that little sliding window and like, can I have a cigarette? And they'd like throw a cigarette back and shut the window. And it was very tragic, right? So we get to the airport, and they were just like, shame on you, shame on you. Look at you. Like, you know, Sacramento is the capital of California, for Christ's sake. It's crawling with sheriffs. You don't want to go there messed up. And I was, like, beyond messed up. And they left me at the airport and drove away really fast. And smart thinking alcoholic addict that I am, I check all my luggage with all my paraphernalia and so forth, and then proceed to just, I don't know, be wasted and wait for my airplane. I mean, who knew that was a crime, right? Next thing I know, you know, it's like the day before Christmas Eve, so there's all sorts of Christmas travelers, ho, 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 and me, and I'm like surrounded by sheriffs, and they're like, ma'am, come with us. What's wrong with you? What's going on? Like looking at my arms, and it was like very embarrassing, you know, like obviously like I was embarrassing myself bad enough. But I didn't see it that way. In my mind, these people were deterring me from making it to rehab, and if I didn't make it, it was going to be their fault. So I got pulled into some weird questioning room at Sacramento Airport. They couldn't find anything on me. I missed my flight, and I had to call my friends, Louie and Tony, these like Cuban weed dealer kids that I knew, whose dad was like this bank robber maniac that I knew from my L.A. days. So I got his kids to give me a ride to pick me up in Ontario and drive me to rehab. So I'm like, I missed the flight. It's not my fault. Don't be mad. I'm coming. I'm still coming. And I'm like, I'm drama. I'm complete drama 24/7. And it's not just like the outside drama. It's like the drama that's up here. And I got news for you. 12 years clean and sober, no drugs and alcohol, and there's still like crazy drama up in my head. I think that goes hand in hand with our disease. So I miss my flight, and I get another flight, and then I'm on that flight crying, telling all these, anyone that will listen, did you see those cops? Oh my God, I'm trying to go to rehab. Like, telling people this, you know, and people are probably just horrified and hostage because they're on a fucking plane with me, and they can't get away, and they probably just want to leave, and they don't want to listen, and they don't want to watch this tragic demise of a young woman. So I get to Ontario Airport, and all I can think about is the stuff that's in my suitcase. And of course, on the plane, I'm like drinking anything I can get my hands on. And I'm coming down the escalator, and there's my bags, because I, like I said, I'd moved from Japan to Chico, and I really never had much of a home. So I had like all these bags filled with all my travels from being in Asia for 3 years, like the most random stuff ever, like really, really, really random, like tapestries from Thailand and like book, just weird stuff. And I'm coming down the escalator, and there's my stuff like all opened up and pawed through, surrounded by more police. And I was just like, oh my God, you're kidding me, not again. And I'm on the escalator, and then they start pointing, because there's pictures of me in the drama, and they're like, there she is right there! And like, you can't run up an escalator, believe me, I tried. And I'm like, oh God, this is it, I'm done. I'm never going to make it to rehab, oh my God, it's everyone else's fault, they won't get clean and sober, la la la. And I come down, and they're like, we're so happy to see you. Your stuff is so cool. Oh my. Some guy was trying to steal your luggage, but we saved your luggage. And like, they didn't find any of my stuff in there. They were like so proud of themselves that they had like rescued my stuff and they were going to send me on my merry way. And like over in the back corner, I can see the Cuban weed dealer kids just like, what the fuck? Oh my God. She sucks so bad. And I did suck so bad. I called Tony on my way here, because I watched those kids grow up, and Arnie, who the dad, he OD'd when I had like a year clean, and I'd known those kids since they were little kids. The littler one, Tony, used to tell me, my dad says I can't talk to you till I turn 18. Don't talk to me. My dad says I can't talk to you till I turn 18. And Tony hated me and his dad, and he was thoroughly disgusted by us and the demoralization, irreprehensible places we would go to be the kind of alcoholics, addicts that we were. And this is the kind of cunning, baffling disease we have, because now Tony struggles with the same thing, and he's got two babies, and it breaks my heart. And I told Kathleen when she called me today, a lot of us don't stay sober, and I'm not standing up here saying that because of like some freaking stupid, scared, straight tactic. I'm just saying that because it's a reality, and it does break my heart. For some reason today, I was thinking about a couple of women that I've sponsored throughout the years that are just back out there, and they're back out there like gnarly for... my driver knows. And it's heartbreaking to me. And I said, you know what? So I'm not going to stand up there and like, the reason I tell you these funny stories or tragic stories is because hopefully you can relate. Because for me anyways, when I used to sit in meetings and I didn't want to be sober and I didn't want to be clean, I didn't want to hear like, you had to do it this way and you had to do that. That fell on deaf ears, you know? And so I think the best way to hopefully reach someone is through relating, you know? And that's why I tell you these stories, that hopefully you can be like, wow, I felt like that, and I had that drama, and I was that crazy. And so Tony picked me up at the airport, and he threw my dope out in the dumpster, and I dug through the dumpster in Pomona. Now, if that's not a needle in a haystack, I don't know what is. And his brother, the older one, Louie, I don't even know if he said anything the whole, like, less than 24 hours I was there. I feel like he just looked at me the whole time like, oh, what the hell? And really, it felt like what the hell. And it took a long time for that fog to be lifted. The next day was Christmas Eve. I didn't really sleep that good. I was like 87 pounds. My hands were like super swollen, like baseball mitts. I don't really know what that was about, but it was really bad. And they hurt. They just like ached the whole time. So the whole night long, I was waking Tony up like, rub my hands. And the next morning, his dad called and said, hey, man, just bring her by so I can say good luck in detox. And Tony at least had the wherewithal and the brains to be like, hell no, I'm not bringing her by your house, because you know what it would have been like trying to extricate me from that situation. And he drove me kicking and screaming to that. And I was just the other day, I said, do you remember? Because they told me, you have to be here, Lisa, by 2. If you're here 1 minute after 2, you are not coming in. We don't even want to deal with you. You need to be here before 2. So at like 2:05, I'm in Tony's car, like, give me another hit of that. Your mom won't care if I come over on Christmas Eve. And he's like, I'm not bringing you to my house like that. No way. So he dropped me off, chucked me in there, chucked me in all that weird random shit from Japan I had in all those duffel bags. And I went back with my tail between my legs into that rehab that I'd been in so many times before. And I called one of the counselors the other day, Mary Helen, because she is this crazy Vato, Long Beach heroin addict lady, and she used to tell me the funniest stuff. And she was like, "Ay, mija, that first day you came in, man, when they did your intake interview, you were like so jacked up, like we didn't even give you anything to kick. We didn't even need to. We thought you were gonna like flatline out on us, so we just like sent you up there. And I slept right through Christmas, you know." And but I was safe. I don't know. I needed those kind of rehabs that were very, very strict. And this was one of those. They took no shit. You weren't allowed to talk to the guys. You weren't allowed to wear tank tops. You didn't get to go shopping. You did whatever the hell they said when you said to do it, and they were not messing around. And an alcoholic like me, I needed that stuff because me left to my own devices, I make choices like the choices I was just telling you about. So I went in there. The detox lasts 7 to 14 days. They kept me 21. I was a wreck. I was just a wreck. And I was terrified. And I couldn't put my finger on what was behind that terrifiedness. I know that's not really a word, but I just said it, so now it is a word. Right, Brian? Okay, so I couldn't put my finger on it, but I just knew I was scared, and I remember you go through the detox part, and then, like, if you qualify, they send you down to the six-month live-in part, which I'd already done once, so then I wake up one morning, and I have, like, everyone who works at that rehab, like, surrounding me, like, cracking their gum, and like, "So what are you going to do different this time?" And I was like, "I don't fucking know. I do not know. I do not know." But I'd been around these rooms long enough, and I noticed that people that were working at that rehab had been in that rehab with me in 97, so obviously they did something, and I kind of didn't really talk much to anybody, but it was kind of like the low-key private detective that I fancy myself to be. And I was like, so they did this. Did I do that? Nope, I didn't do that. They did that. Got a sponsor. Did I do that? Nope, I didn't do that. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to do the dumb shit that they did that I didn't do, and we'll just, you know, throw the ball in the air and see where it lands. And I remember my 21st day, they admitted me down to the live-in part so graciously. And they had a big, huge NA dance. Now, an NA dance in Pomona. Okay, what I mean? We got, like, gnarly lowriders, like, just gang members everywhere. And I was just, like, telling my counselor, I'm like, "I'm not going to no NA dance." I'm like, I just was kicking upstairs for 21 days. And he was like, "Hey, mija. Mandatory fun, mija, mandatory fun." Mandatory fun? Like, what the hell is that? Oh, my God. But here's the ironic thing, and this is what I always notice. There's, like, so many ironic things about this program that I went to the stupid NA dance. It was terrifying and just awkward, and I haven't slept, and I'm pissed. Mandatory friggin' fun. But that was the first night I got some sleep. He, like, forced me out of my comfort zone. You know what I mean? And that, to me, is ironic. Like, we think, oh, my gosh, the things I think. My brain is so exhausting. I was driving to work the other day at 4. I thought, okay, I got in my car, and I thought it said 4:56. So I was, like, in this really big hurry, and I get on the freeway. And then I'm, like, getting off the freeway, and it says 4:56, and I think I'm in a time warp. I'm like, oh my God, the fucking world stops. Like, this is where my alcoholic mind goes. Seriously, it's jacked up. Jacked up. And I spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out, like, was I super fucked up and crazy, like, before all the drugs and the alcohol? Or did the drug, like, the chicken or the egg theory? And I totally suffer from chicken little syndrome big time. This guy is funny, oh my God. I'm in a time warp. I'm like, it's still 4:56. It's like that movie Groundhog Day, you know? I'm going to be driving to work in the dark, like, forever. Now, this is it. It's done. I'm never going to see my kid again. Oh, my God. I'm a wreck. So I think that lady that shared last week, I really liked what she said about our disease centers in the mind, because the only preparation I did for this speaking thing, besides totally stress out and listen to the CD that someone made of me 2 years ago, which a lot of my friends have listened to, because I didn't want to repeat myself, I read the doctor's opinion. And going back to that rehab, I have a very clear, vivid memory of sitting in the laundry room of that rehab, because I'm telling you, this rehab was structure, structure, structure. They did not fuck around, and if you wanted to fuck with their structure, then get the fuck out, was their whole deal. Seriously, they're like, doors open, Whittemore. This ain't jail. Go ahead. And, you know, I came close to the door a number of times because I can't stand people like, but, looking back on it, you know, like, we had to get up at it. We had to do, oh my God. They woke us up at 6 in the morning to go outside and do calisthenics. A bunch of dope fiends. Can you imagine? Like, how funny they're like, look. Really? We got to do this shit? Oh my God. So they had us do that, and they had us go to the lunchroom. You know, certain times, if you didn't eat when you were supposed to eat, oh well. You know, we had to go to these groups. We, like I said, we weren't allowed to talk to the guys. We weren't allowed phone calls. We weren't. And now looking back, like, I hated it. Oh, I thought it was stupid, and I just thought it was, you know, very drastic for someone such as me who's been all over and, you know, fancies themselves a private detective. I remember sitting in the laundry room of this place because we had certain hours that we could do our laundry, and I was by myself. And I was reading the Big Book, which that in and of itself at that time was like shocking, because every other time I had been in that rehab and tried to read the Big Book, it just felt like that Snoopy teacher, wah, 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 like I didn't get it. And I got it this time in the laundry room. Da, da, da. And I remember so many phrases. I love the doctor's opinion, and anyone that I sponsor knows I will drill that shit into your head. There's so much good stuff in there. I mean, it breaks it down in a way that I understood. I'm a chronic alcoholic, not just in the Dr. Dre sense of the word either. You know, I cannot safely drink or use. And check this out. You come with me drinking and using, you're not safe either. Because I am like that Tasmanian devil. I just like create shit wherever I go. And you probably shouldn't come along for the ride because it's tragic. Again, that's the word for the night, tragic. So I was sitting in the room and I read that. And then there's this part that breaks it down about how we have this obsession of the mind. And I could so relate to that because, like I shared with you, I'd been through countless detoxes and rehabs. I went through New York, Boston, all in California. And I knew that one of my main things was I, like, obsessed on drinking and using. Like, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And that's why I always relapsed. I relapsed all the time. I've told people I relapsed so many times. I got so many of those chips I can make those like beaded 70s curtains that you walk through. I'll make you one. I just obsessed. So I would always give in to the obsession because that just seemed like the easier way than going the other way. You know, I would obsess on it. And so I would just do it. And, you know, it was like uncontrollable, and I think there's probably a lot of people that can relate to that. I couldn't stop. And so there, we have this obsessive mind, which I've also shared with you. My obsessive mind is completely intact without drugs and alcohol, so that can sometimes be more painful. And then we have this allergy. And I remember all the other times I went through rehab where they would talk about having an allergy to alcohol. I was like, that right there is some bullshit. Like, you know, what are they talking about? Like, allergic to alcohol. Ugh. Well, if you look up allergy in the dictionary, it's an abnormal reaction. Well, I for sure have an abnormal reaction. Maybe not every single time. Well, towards the end, every single time. And it's weird because I do think some people, such as my friends Tony and Louie, the Cuban weed dealer gangster kids, I think some people are predisposed to alcoholism or addiction because they've been brought up in it. I myself wasn't brought up in it. I was born and raised in Boston. Shout out, Boston Joe. And I came from like a very uppity family. You know, my parents were divorced, but you know, they were always really like, do the right thing and be a good girl and get good grades. And you know, I did maintain that for quite a while. So I don't believe I was born with the allergy, but I believed through years of overindulgence, shall we say, I developed an allergic reaction to drugs and alcohol. And like I said, yeah, I cannot safely drink or use. And so there's the obsession of the mind, there's the allergy. And then as soon as we give in to that allergy, like it's so funny too, I never ever believed that one where it's the first one is too many, the la la la, all that, miss me with that shit. But you know what? It is the first one. It's the first one. It's not the 10,000th one 3 years later when you relapse. It's the very first one. Because once you take that first one, la la la, you're off and running. Often unstoppable. And then your head's obsessing, which just adds to the frickin' mayhem. And then it's this chaos. Chaos. And I remember when I went into that rehab, that was the one thing, couple things I craved. Didn't want to feel so chaotic between my ears constantly, all the time. It was fucking exhausting. And I wanted the obsession to be lifted. So another funny thing that I went, someone in one of my first meetings when I was back in that rehab gave me one of those little cards with the third step prayer on it. I didn't know it was the third step prayer. I just knew that it said like, ask God to take me and relieve me of the bondage of self. And I was like so bonded by myself. It was of epic proportions. And it was awful and painful. And I shared this in the last thing, so if you heard this the last 2 years ago, oh well. God, the human condition to me is baffling. I spend a lot of time in my head thinking about just how odd life is, you know? And I remember, you know, like just like being on point with my drugs and alcohol, and like it identified who I was, and it was my best friend, and it was my only friend, and it was my boyfriend, and you don't understand. And it's like that until it turns on you, and then it's like a double-edged sword, and then it isolates you, and you are all alone with just that, and it feels pretty terrible. So I was in that rehab again, and it's funny because the first two times I was in there, I just tried to be the little rat bastard that I was, you know, and cause a whole lot of mayhem and like break the rules and get in trouble. I stole a soda from the counselor's lounge, and we weren't allowed caffeine at this rehab because la la la, I get all fucking crazy. And so whenever you broke a rule there and they caught you, which was every fucking time because they were like on you like white on rice, you had to like write these things called learning experiences and then stand in front of everybody, kind of like I'm doing now, and say, I stole a soda from the lounge. Why did I steal? And then they read into this shit. They were like, girl, you had sense of entitlement. You had, and I'm like, I just stole a soda. But you know, like looking back on it, like everything they said and everything they did made sense. So yeah, I had to do all these learning experiences, and you just I remember when you had to go to like a dentist appointment or a doctor's appointment, they would send you in the bus. We all know about the buses, right? And you had to take support with you, which meant like some other drug addict, alcoholic goes with you. And then you like beg them, like, hey, let me use the phone. Let me drink some coffee. You'll wrap me out. Yeah, yeah, you know, and it's just jacked up because then you just like get everyone all into your chaos and just stupid. And I remember like I went out with this girl and we... It's a state-funded program, so you go to that gnarly hospital, USC, in downtown LA. Like, you send a bunch of drug addicts downtown, you know? And she took off. And it was awful. Like, and she didn't come back. And I, like, waited. Oh, shit. And, like, waited and waited. And then, like, I was, like, everything's going through my head, because as we already talked about, I had this obsessive mind that doesn't ever shut the fuck up. And then when I go, la, 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 la. And I had to call and be like, she took off, you know? And then you come back, and everyone's like, hey, where'd she go? What'd she do? Who'd she leave you? Did she make any phone calls? And then they would have you sit down. They would put the whole facility on lockdown. Like, they'd yell out this code red, and then everybody would have to, like, go into one room so nobody was missing, and then they'd, like, jack up your room. I mean, it really was like jail. And they'd, like, jack up your room, and then they would come, the counselors would come in, and ask everybody, like, how that made you feel. And I remember, like, the first time I was in there thinking, how's that make me feel? It makes me feel like they're high, probably, and I'm not, and that sucks. But that last time, I don't know, like, I walked around like a zombie, like, saying that third step prayer. I didn't even know it was the third step prayer. I just knew it was a little card that talked about the bondage of self, and I knew I needed help, and oh my God, la la la, this saved me. And I don't know why I keep saying la la la. It's like annoying me right now. so I like walk around saying that, and I just prayed so much to have the obsession removed, because that was my biggest thing. It's like I didn't have the strength to say no to that thing, you know, the thing that was like always there and super super loud. So I read that doctor's opinion in the laundry room, and I remember I went to my counselor, Mary Helen, and I was like crying, and I was happy, and I said, I think I had a revelation, I don't know, maybe it's a heart attack, but something's going on, and she's like, ay, mija, you're just having feelings, eh? And I was like, what the fuck is that? You know, because seriously, like, I have been under, like, heavy-duty sedation. I am not the type of, I like a lot of alcohol. I like a lot of heroin. I like to like be near dead. I don't like anything that takes me up because I'm already like way up here. So I need to like go down, and in my mind I need a lot of help. And Mary Helen, she told me, you're just having feelings, mija. You know, you don't have to be scared. You, this was my favorite. And when I called her the other day, I told her, remember when you said that thing to me? She goes, today you get to have feelings. You get to have feelings today. He's like, oh, lucky me. And honestly, like, I didn't know what to do with feelings. It was completely foreign and bizarre and honestly, like, pretty uncomfortable. And I think we all can relate to, like, you know, feeling uncomfortable in these rooms. And I just kept doing what my sponsor told me to do. Because, like I said, I came from this, like, super uptight family in Boston. They were constantly fucking telling me what to do. So I'm really good at, like, acting like I'm doing what you told me to do. Look at me, going to school, doing what you said. La, la, la. I did it again. Oh, my God. There's another thing we have to deal with. It's getting me off of saying la, la, la. And so, you know, I remember I did step one. And I have to say, standing up here taking 12 years, seriously, like, it blows my fucking mind. And it wasn't my plan to, like, stay sober day after day. I was just going to, like, try to wing it like I usually did for a while and bone out if it didn't pan out. 12 years is, like, crazy. And, like, seriously, all I can think about is a dozen donuts when I say that. So this is my head, people. This is what I live in. Crazy. Crazy. I just totally lost my train of thought. Donuts, yeah. Do you have a donut? Sugar gets me on my roll. So I can't, okay, I know what I was at. Okay, So with these 12 years, like in the beginning, like saying I was powerless over drugs and alcohol, my life had become unmanageable, I had no qualms about that one. Like I knew I had an obsessive mind. I knew I had an allergy. I knew if I took the very first one, I'm fucked, you're fucked, anyone around me fucked, not a good, a bad idea. I knew my life was unmanageable because now I didn't have a driver's license. I got my driver's license after I'd worked at Trader Joe's out here for like 4 years. They announced it over the loudspeaker. Whittemore has a driver's license. I was like, yeah, bitches, what's up now? I had to take a test and stuff. Like, oh my God, how embarrassing. So, because pretty much from like 92 to 2000, I was like living on the streets and running rampant and running wild and doing whatever the hell I wanted to do. And it was crazy, you know, and things like, yeah. So admitting I was powerless over drugs and alcohol, I still have no problem with that. I know that. The part that gets harder is being powerless over life. I still have a very difficult time with that one. I definitely have a firm belief in the fact that there is someone else in charge up here. We sit in these rooms, we hear these stories, such as the ones I'm telling you, and honestly, you can choose to believe me or not, but I honestly should not still be standing here. Because when I went in, oh God, it is tragic. There was just so much physical stuff wrong with me, and like, I remember the first time I went in there in 94, I was like missing teeth from fighting and falling over from in bathtubs from ODing and just, you know, like crazy, crazy, bad stuff. There was a lot of bad things that happened. So I know there's a power greater than a human being at work out there. The first time I took step 3 with my sponsor, and it's so funny because I remember thinking too, that I wanted a sponsor who was exactly like me, who was like some crazy punk rocker, all tattooed, she had to go to jail. I had like a checklist that she had to fulfill, you know? And it's so funny because I got handed, my first sponsor is Erin, and Kathleen is my current sponsor. And Erin was like long flowing hair, went to like a Native American church. And she couldn't have been more different than me than night and day. And she knew exactly what to say to me all the time. And I love her to this day. And the first time I did my third step with her, like by a stream, all peaceful, I remember I was freaking out about doing the third step because, like, as I stated before, I could never, ever stay clean and sober. I obsessed constantly on drinking and using, and I always picked up. And I was scared about taking the third step where you turn your will and your life over because I was like, well, what if I do it, but then I'm a liar because then I take it back and then I go, like, get high again. And I remember too telling her, I might not be a drug addict or alcoholic. This might be a little drastic. And she was like, oh, for Christ's sake, are you kidding me? And I remember she told me to turn to page 44 in the big book. And I looked at, that's the other thing I looked at today. There's two questions there. One of them, if when you honestly want to, you cannot stop. I was like, all right, fair enough, check. And the second one, if you cannot, once you start, you cannot control the amount you take. I was like, oh, that one too, bitches, yeah. She's like, and Erin was just always so simple because me, like I've already stated, and I'm sure it's very apparent, I'm crazy. I want to pick shit apart and figure it out, like put it into little boxes and then like, dissect it and freaking manipulate it. And Erin was always just like, okay, so did you answer the two questions? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, okay, so you're an alcoholic. Let's take the third step. And she was very clear-cut and precise, and that's exactly what I needed. Just like those drug programs that were strict with me, that's exactly what I needed. And we did my fourth and fifth step. And again, that was really... People talk about the fourth step being like, the fourth step, oh my God. You know, miss me with that drama. All it is, it's so easy. Everything is in that big book. You just do exactly as it tells you to do. You make the list, you write it out. They help you fill out the fourth column and see your part, which is very daunting, I might say. And you swallow huge chunks of yourself that you may not like. But I was ready to do that stuff, too. I was so sick of who I had become. I had some requests, Mike. Okay. Here's another prime example of who I had become. I've been living on the streets in Venice for quite a while at this time. I would, like, bounce around from random people's couches. But honestly, like, I didn't really like being just, like, the crazy alcoholic dopey on the couch. Like, people walk by and they're like, who's that? And they're like, oh, this is an alcoholic on the couch. Like, you know, it's like weird, you know? So I'd rather just like do my own thing on the curb, much easier. So there was this guy that had like a large car. I don't know, like a large car. Mike probably knows what kind of car. With like a large bench front seat and a large front back seat, And he basically rented me the back seat. And as usual, I have like all this shit with me, you know, so I put it in his trunk and I would have to like supply him with a little issue every day and he let me live in his car. So I lived in his car. And I remember one day I was like late to bring him his little issue and he was like standing. I can still see right where it was, right outside of this like children's park. And he's like mad. He's standing there with his arms crossed and he's pissed and I'm late. And all my shit's, like, outside of his car. And he's like, you're out of here! And I was like, I'm out of here? Kicked out of a car. Kicked out of a car! Like, who the fuck gets kicked out of a car? It's terrible. That's how bad, you know? And like I said at the beginning, I tell this stuff because it is funny and it is tragic, but I just hope someone can relate and go, oh my God, yeah. Kicked out of a car. So that was bad. And then my last, you know, I've held the same job now, God willing, for 9 years. And the last, like, legit job that I had before I went into rehab in 2000 was at this big liquor store up in Chico. Because it's like a big college town, and they rent kegs, and they rent tubes to go inner tubing. And so I worked there, and I was like, always late and always high and always hungover and always like reeked of alcohol because I was saturated to the very core. And I went one day to get my paycheck and the owner was like, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And I was like, yeah, sure. Like all freaking indignant because, you know, it's me. He's like, you know, we're going to have to let you go. And I was like, what? Why? He's like, really? Why? You want to see why? We have it on tape. I was like, so I would just stay up for days and days and days, and then I nodded out, like, handing some customer back his credit card, and they had it on tape. So I was like, okay, fair enough, can I have my paycheck, I'll go. Because, like, how bad is that? Oh my gosh. That is the kind of demoralization, just icky, bad stuff that we do. That, you know what, it says in the big book, your alcoholic life becomes your normal life. That, like, wasn't even weird to me. I was just like, okay, got fired from that job, on to the next one. Which there wasn't a next one, because I went to rehab on Christmas Eve. So now, I got steps 4 and 5 done. 5 and 6, got a bunch of character defects. The good news is, you're not in charge of anything, really. That's the whole motto of this program, but you're not in charge of removing them. They get removed from you when he sees fit. He, she sees fit. And I have news for you. Sometimes they come back. They resurface. Very sneaky. We have a very sneaky disease, in case you guys haven't noticed. It's very, when they say cunning, baffling, and powerful, that is true to such a degree. It's a amazing. So you have the character defects, and then we go to steps 8 and 9. And I have to say, this is the other thing I wanted to share about, that those steps were the hardest, the most painful, the most agonizing, the hardest. I'm not going to say la la la. They brought the most healing, for sure. You know, during my whole manic dope fiendness, I'd moved back to Boston because I had this illusion that maybe if I get around my family, they'll help me get clean. Like, that was a bad idea. Because they did try to help, but I got news for you. Like, if you don't want help and you're not willing to accept help, then don't go frickin' posing like you want help and just be a nightmare to everybody. And I was a total nightmare. My dad is like a very successful businessman in Boston, and I would like, still, this makes me sick to my stomach. I would show up at his office just like strung out like a research monkey, just like freaking hair everywhere, tattoos, yay, you never love me, give me some money. And I was terrible, so terrible, you know. And I gotta say, my dad is one of the first people that called and said happy birthday. And when I made my amends to him, it was awful. Oh my God, I had like about a year, and I was back in Boston visiting, and of course I save it to the very last hour of the very last fucking day that I'm there, because I don't want to do it. And I even called Aaron, and I was like, he knows I stole the money. God knows I stole the money. I don't really got to fucking talk about it, do I? She's like, oh yeah, you got to talk about it. You got to tell him you stole the money. Oh, for Christ's sake. Agonizing. Because that is so just like, Dad, you loved me. You tried to be the best dad you could. And I just jacked you mercilessly. And I'm really sorry. And I will do whatever you want to make that right, you know? And he's so proud of me now. And, you know, we were never close. He's like, plays golf. He doesn't let me in. You're like, I asked to go. I mean, even when I was sober, I asked to use the bathroom at the golf club one time, and he said no. But you know what? it's all right, you know. And then, you know, there's some amends that I made to, you know, there's an amend I made to this guy up in Chico. I worked at his bar. I stole from him, too. And he fucking deserved it as far as I was concerned, because he was an asshole, and he talked a whole bunch of shit about me. When he didn't even have to do that, because I was already making a bad enough name for myself. Just adding insult to injury. And I'm telling you, you put those people on that list, they will appear. Trust me, they will appear. In 1 month, three people from Chico were in San Clemente and were like, you need to call Dave Singletary. He's so messed up. He's still messed up. It's sad. But that's one thing, too, that I'm really, really strong-willed about in this program. Like, any of my friends that still drink or use, any of my friends that relapse, they will all attest to the fact that I will always be there for them when they need help. I am never, oh, I have 12 years, I know, like, I can't. It helps keep me, I guess, humble is the right word. I'm not sure. I don't really like the way that sounds. I like la 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 better. But, you know, I called him and he said, is this one of those stupid AA things? And you don't have to tell me. It's cool. I'm just glad you're clean. But you know what? I had to tell him because it's about, like, getting my heart clean. And then it's funny because, like I said, I'm going to finish with this. I listened to the CD that someone made when I talked 2 years ago here, and I talked about my boyfriend from Boston that when we moved out here to California together, we moved here because the plan was he was going to be a movie star and I was just along for the ride. And I ended up like getting this killer job in the record industry, and he ended up like being a sous chef at a restaurant. It like got all like juxtaposed and mixed around. And so I'm like partying with rock stars and he's like sauteing onions, and he was pissed. And I treated him very, very badly, and it wasn't pretty. And when I spoke 2 years ago, I had emailed him and made amends, which it took me like almost 10 years to do. And he lives in France now. In my mind, he has the most beautiful life, and you know, what happened? he owns a restaurant, married, lives in France with three children, and I didn't hear back from him. And we were together for years, and we moved across the country together. Like, I look back on it, and, like, we were, like, little kids, really, you know? We were, like, 19 years old, like, conquered the world, yeah, we're going to L.A. But, yeah, I didn't hear back from him, and I said that I was sorry for the way I treated him and that that wasn't right. And just recently, he emailed me back, like, years later. And I told my friend Matt, like, he requested to be my friend on Facebook, which if anybody knows, like, if you're friends on Facebook, that must mean you're, like, really friends, you know? And, God. But that was huge for me. Like, for him to say, you're not so bad. You know, that's all we want. We just, like I said when I got up here, like, my thought process, my translator is like so fucked up. Like, you guys can tell me, like, you were great, it was really good, and what I hear is so not that, you know? but I think that we get, I can't speak for we, but me, like, I got clean and sober, I just wanted the chaos to, like, simmer down, I wanted to feel okay in my own skin, and I wanted to have people care about me, and I have that today, so thanks for letting me share.